Coming up on Tech News Today, why YouTube or maybe Netflix are buffering on your ISP. The answer may surprise you. Also, Amazon to crowdsource its pilot green lighting system. And Google Glass gets a cheaper competitor. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, July 29th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT7. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zacher.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, put them in some context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day, the Fused News. China Labor Watch has alleged that three factories of Chinese company Pegatron violate international and Chinese laws and standards. Among the allegations are underage labor, contract violations, and excessive working hours. Pegatron chief executive Jason Chang said the company would investigate the allegations immediately and correct any violations. Pegatron makes parts for Apple products. Apple said its auditors would return to Pegatron this week for special inspections.
Apple has confirmed that Bob Mansfield is no longer senior vice president of technologies or on its senior leadership team after reports over the weekend noted that Mansfield had been dropped from Apple's executive webpage. Apple states that despite leaving his current position, Mansfield will work on special projects for the company in a role that sees him report directly to CEO Tim Cook. Mansfield had previously announced his plans to retire after 13 years. Last year, he mentioned that, heading up Apple's hardware division, but then had agreed to remain with the company until 2014.
The Business Software Alliance, a trade group that represents companies including Microsoft and Intel, is aligning itself with Apple in Apple's case against Samsung before the International Trade Commission. The ITC ruled that Apple infringed on Samsung patents that could lead to certain Apple products being banned. Apple argued those patents were standard essential patents. The Business Software Alliance told the ITC that the use of essential industry patents should not be used to ban products except under unusual circumstances.
Sony and Panasonic do not believe the disc is dead, ladies and gentlemen. Panasonic announced on Monday that it will work with Sony to create a new standard for an optical disc capable of recording at least 300 gigabytes of data. That's compared to the Blu-ray, which can do at best 50 gigabytes. The new format is planned for an unveiling by the end of 2015 and will target those who need to archive large amounts of data for long-term storage.
Now I just have to find an optical drive somewhere. Don't see those much anymore. Are you ready for the iPhone 5C? Pictures of packaging with that name have begun floating around, leading more in speculation than ever that the budget iPhone is just around the corner. The latest pictures were posted on Chinese forum YPhone and seem to support the rumors that the cheaper iPhone will reintroduce the polycarbonate casing of the iPhone 3GS and could make it easier to produce it in a range of colors.
Nokia's VP of App Development, Brian Biniak, gave an interview with the International Business Times where he groused about Microsoft's slow pace of progress on Windows Phone. He says that Nokia is trying to evolve the cultural thinking at Microsoft to say time is of the essence. Biniak did say that Nokia and Microsoft are still close partners, but the two companies are working very differently.
Ooh, trouble in paradise. Toshiba just announced new satellite laptops with the look of their sleek brushed metal KiraBook line, but for a little less money. The 15-inch E55 Ultrabook has a touchscreen and sells for $679 with an AMD processor and $899 for an Intel Core i-series. The 14-inch E45 will be a Best Buy retail exclusive for $799 or $817 from the Toshiba website. The E45T Best Buy version goes on sale August 4th with the E55 series following in September.
Back in January at CES, Dell had showed off its Android-powered Project Ophelia dongle that plugs into a TV or any other display with an HDMI port. Now, finally, it looks like the units are being shipped to testers. So Ophelia's big draw is support for Dell's Wise Cloud computing technology, which allows users to remotely access files that are stored on PCs or servers and can connect to Citrix or VMware-powered virtual machines. Ophelia has a $100 price tag, and if it's a hit, could provide a little bit more insight into Dell's post-PC world domination strategy. I'm still stuck on that iPhone C.
Everything with a C, including Corning. Corning introduced Gorilla Glass for your laptop Monday. Gorilla Glass NBT is still the same strong, scratch-resistant glass you know and love from your smartphones, but made specifically for touchscreen laptops. Corning says the new glass will only raise the cost of a laptop by a couple percentage points. Dell already says it will introduce laptops with Gorilla Glass NBT this autumn.
Ilya Siglovich, co-founder of Yandex, died on Saturday after battling stomach and brain cancer. Now, Yandex is Russia's largest search engine. Siglovich served as Yandex CTO. He was 48 years old.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace. You hear me go on and on about how much I like Squarespace. I use it. It's an all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. I use it for meritbooks.squarespace.com. We use it on swordandlaser.com. And now I'd like to check out some of the sites you guys built with Squarespace. Send a tweet with a link to your Squarespace website and use the hashtag TNT Squarespace, and we'll take a look. We might even choose your Squarespace site to mention in a future episode. If you don't know about Squarespace, don't forget they're all constantly improving their platform with new features. They have beautiful designs for you to start with. In fact, if you're like, I want to get in on this tweet action, you can start a Squarespace site right now. You're going to have a beautiful award-winning design right from the get-go, and it's easy to use, incredibly easy to use. Support team works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it all starts at $8 a month, including a free domain name if you sign up for a year at a time. It's mobile-ready. You've probably heard me talk about how it looks right, whether you're on a 5-inch screen or a 12-inch screen or a 29-inch screen. And one thing I haven't talked about as much is their SEO. It's SEO-optimized, search engine-optimized, ensuring your site's content can be crawled by Google, Yahoo, Bing, all the search engines out there, and hosting's included. Squarespace takes care of the hosting. You don't have to. Start a trial right now with no credit card required and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TNT7 to get 10% off and show your support for Tech News Today. And don't forget to send a tweet with that hashtag. It's TNT Squarespace. We might be talking about your Squarespace site on a future episode. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. Onward into the discussion, and joining us today for the first time, very happy to have Kevin Toefel, senior writer from GigaOM, on the show. Good to have you, Kevin.
Hey, it's good to be here. I was actually just enjoying the show. Now I have to talk, apparently.
Yeah, you all the talking. If you ever do talking back at things, now's the time.
I do that all the time. Just ask my kids.
Perfect. You'll be a natural then. Amazon Studios has crowdsourced approval of a pilot before, after it's made, but now IaaS, it looks like they may bring the crowdsourcing in a little earlier in the process.
Yeah, Amazon Studios director Roy Price, so he's the boss of that subdivision there, he says he wants to figure out a way to get viewer feedback on shows before a pilot's even created. He asked, is there a way to test a concept short of making a full-blown pilot? And as Tom mentioned, currently Amazon chooses pilots and then asks for viewer feedback from the general public. And that feedback is influential as to which pilots become series. It optioned 5 of the 14 pilots it released. But Kevin, if we were going to work for Amazon right now, come up with an idea, what kind of pre-pilot test would even work for Amazon? Is it like trailers? Are we talking about comic books, storyboards? What would it be?
Hey, I'd do what everybody else is doing. Just put it on Kickstarter. Seriously. I mean, to be honest, I've actually funded a DVD on Kickstarter, a DVD project called Eye on the 60s, and I basically funded it just based on the content itself. So, you know, a lot of people backed it, and I just got my DVD in the mail the other day. So, I mean, seriously, it might be good enough just to do that, just a high-level overview right on a Kickstarter.
I think it's forward thinking of Amazon to say, listen, there are a lot of really great ideas out there. The traditional model where you have to put together a pilot that assumes that the show is going to be picked up. Pilots can be really expensive. You know, there's actors to pay and all sorts of stuff, and you got sets and the whole design. And maybe if you can put together something that's a little bit more cobbled together, then you have people who will rise to the top instead of the barrier to entry being so high financially that a company like Amazon would never even, it would never even cross their desks.
Yeah, I think this is a really cool idea for Amazon to say, okay, we would like the crowd to inform what pilots are going to be created. That's what they did with the pilots that had been created this last round. And Amazon, they did it right. They didn't say it's going to be a simple vote. They said, we're going to look at the votes, and then we're going to decide based on that how many will green light. So Amazon still has control over it. They can do the same thing. I think it'd be funny if they did some, you know, treat the crowd like they're the executive. Make the people give you an elevator pitch, maybe a video in an actual elevator of the creators of the shows pitching you on the thing, because that's it. You can't, you've got to give the pitch. You've got to maybe show some scripts, maybe some clips or something like that. Storyboards. Yeah, sure. But I think Kevin's totally right. It's like pitching Kickstarter in the, at this phase. It's like saying, okay, I want to make something. Here's what I want to make. Will you back it?
So you'd have like a little intro video explaining it. So that'd be the elevator pitch in a nutshell. And you'd have this long description as to each pilot. It just seems like, or series, I guess, in an idea. But would that decrease interest in a series if you actually know how the series is going to unfold? Because you're not just going to say, here's one episode of my show. You're going to explain, we're planning to do this arc. And that seems like something you would want to have in the hands or in the minds of the content companies, not necessarily all your viewers, unless that's different now.
But the viewers don't necessarily know what the whole first season is supposed to be about. They should be sold on the premise of the show, right? I mean, you're not saying in episode 4, somebody knows.
Maybe
do you want us to make it or not? I mean, also, of the first round of pilots that Amazon had pushed on the public and said, hey, check these out, let us know, there wasn't a lot of, I mean, there was some enthusiasm, but as I remember, there were a lot of pilots that people were like, not really all that interested. So maybe Amazon's saying, okay, well, let's go about this the opposite way. Let's get the mind of the crowd involved before the pilots go out so that there's less of people being disappointed with what we're offering them because we're getting their feedback ahead of time.
Bear in mind also, Amazon has a ton of interesting big data type feedback on what people are watching on Amazon Video. If they could kind of merge some of those some of that data and say, hey, this pilot that somebody's pitching us is very similar to or has similar attributes to this show or movie that a lot of people are watching, it's got a great information source right there. Why not merge the two together and leverage that information?
Yeah, I think that's right. Amazon's not going to put anything out in front of the crowd that they don't think probably has a good idea. This is just sort of like breaking the tie. It's kind of like what we do with Randomizer on TNT. I put stories up there that any of them would make a good randomizer, and then we do a straw poll to figure out which one we talk about. It's just that on a larger scale, which with much more at stake, obviously.
Yeah, Amazon could collect a lot of crazy data if they wanted to with their Kindle Fire and everything, where they have those the option of, you know, you could tap somebody's face and you can go to their IMDb page that kind of way. It'd be like, would you like to see this actor in a comedy where he's like a bumbling dad? You could click yes. They could probably get all kinds of data if they wanted to, if they were nuts.
Now, the question is whether you'll actually be able to stream any of this stuff in the future. And John Brodkin from Ars Technica has a great article. It's a 4-page article, but it's absolutely worth the read, going into why sometimes YouTube, Netflix, some other services just seem to be crappy. I was watching Bravo TV Top Chef video, and it stopped and buffered like every minute, it seemed like. And I was like, well, is it me? Because my connection seemed fine just now when I was watching something else. Is it them? Is it their website? Turns out it might be the ISP. Little quick backgrounder here. There's two things that the major internet providers do. One is called peering. That's an agreement to exchange traffic between networks, and it's usually without any kind of cost involved. They just say, look, you're going to send us a bunch of traffic. We're going to send you a bunch of traffic. That's the way the internet works. There's also something called caching servers, and that's what Google does for YouTube. Netflix does it for their service as well, where you put a server with your data in the ISP so that it's closer to the ISP's customers, and it makes the service that much better. However, the ISPs are starting to dispute this, and he goes into some of the history. And usually it's not action. It's not blocking anything. It's inaction. So the interconnection between the two companies, let's say it's Cogent, which is providing the data from Netflix and Verizon, they have routers that interconnect and send traffic back to each other. And those routers start to get busy because there's so much traffic. Verizon can say, we're not adding capacity yet. We can't afford it. It becomes more apparent with video because latency is so important, because video is a high data. But it doesn't happen particularly to video. They're not blocking video in particular. And everybody's already paying here, by the way. Netflix pays somebody like Cogent to deliver their traffic. Customers pay Verizon. What's happening is the ISPs want to make more money. Everybody wants to make more money. And the motivation for ISPs is data is a high-margin utility product under their local monopoly control. So if Netflix or YouTube are buffering all the time, what are you going to do? You're going to switch ISPs? No, only 34% of U.S. households have a choice of internet provider offering at least 6 megabits per second down. And Netflix requires about 5 megabits per second down for a good connection. One solution, according to somebody that Broad could talk to, was ISPs selling video products outside their network. Verizon's doing this. They're partnered with Redbox selling a video process. That means that they want access to customers that aren't on their ISP, so they might be less willing to use the heavy club of saying, we're not going to add capacity. But given the complex nature of this, given the fact that it's out of the public eye, and given the fact that there really doesn't seem to be any end to the virtual monopoly that these ISPs had, what can we do as end users? Kevin, do you have any thoughts on this?
You know, this is a big mess, and I'm actually very lucky. Where I live in rural Pennsylvania, we have Verizon Fios. I've got 75 megabits down, 35 backup, and I really don't see these kind of problems. But I think I'm in the minority based on John's excellent article. What can we do? I mean, the problem is that all of this happens behind the scenes. And as you pointed out, Tom, consumers really don't know. It's painfully obvious with video, because when you have latency in your video, you've got these kind of issues that are easy to see. But, you know, this comes back to me where the ISPs don't want to be dumb pipes. Everybody is paying everybody, but nobody's, I guess, happy in terms of the fact that there's more money to be made here. I mean, the ISPs can squeeze more money. They're going to try and do it, just like we see cellular networks do. I have to wonder if anybody's looking at this from a net neutrality standpoint in terms of limiting these services or taking an action when they need to be taking action to get things sped up for consumers. I'm not sure what we can do, because we really don't have much choice.
You know, this actually kind of happened to me last night. I was watching Orange is the New Black on Netflix. I'm just basically marathoning the whole show. I would watch it 6 hours straight. And, you know, by the fourth hour or so, I'm on my laptop, and I started to click on a couple YouTube videos that, you know, somebody had shared or whatever. And I found that I was having issues getting the YouTube videos to load, and they weren't even really very long. And I was kind of thinking, like, to myself, is this just too much video coming to my house at this point? Well, what is the solution for me? Well, I could go up a tier with Comcast. That's who I pay to get internet access. It's the only company that I can use, but I probably won't. So I kind of just suffer through that every now and then. Usually I'm not watching something on Netflix and then watching another video at the same time, but it does happen. And in the case of last night, it was not smooth. It wasn't seamless. It was annoying. I couldn't do both.
You know, the lack of competition, I'm just thinking of Tom's question. What can we do is pretty much move to where there's fiber. That's what it seems like.
Yeah.
Or go to Kansas City, or just follow Google around like
Kansas
a deadhead.
City,
everyone move to Kansas City, quick. Or Austin.
Oh, yeah, and then there won't be any bandwidth problems there, because we're all at the same
time. Don't forget
time.
Provo.
Oh, that's right. Going to Utah. So let's do
you
that,
have three
right?
choices.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There we go. That's. I guess you got to follow Google around. That's it.
Yeah, you really do have to watch out for choices. Anytime you see someone, whether it's a government or a company or a lobbyist, trying to limit the ISP choices you have, that's a bad thing. Anytime you see companies saying, we're going to provide video, but only to our own customers, that's a bad thing. Because this is all happening on the back end, right? They've realized that they can't use the bandwidth caps to squeeze as much money out of people as they thought. So they're moving it out of the public eye and trying to use their leverage to force the tier one players out there to pay up. And the tier one players don't want to do it. And the tier one players have a lot of leverage themselves. But there's not a clear solution to this sort of issue. And the end user, most of them are just going to think like, oh, YouTube must suck right now. They're not going to necessarily, they might blame their ISP, but they're not going to know that this is what's going on behind the scenes.
Yep.
Let's move back to Amazon expanding its operations team in the U.S. This is getting back to talking about Amazon, not as a video provider, but as somebody who sells you things.
Yeah, Amazon had as many called it, a disappointing quarter in its last earnings report. Net loss of $7 million. But Jeff Bezos has kind of famously said, I don't really pay attention to quarterly gains or losses because it's all long-term strategy. And it looks like they're going long-term with its operations team, which it is expanding by 25%. The company has announced it'll hire an additional 5,000 staff members to meet growing customer demands. Amazon's fulfillment business, you know, that's operations and business analysis and inventory management and customer delivery, already has about 20,000 employees. So it's a big part of Amazon. Company says they'll also hire 2,000 full-time and part-time customer service representatives. And this, if you look at the trend of the last few years, just makes sense. Amazon has more than tripled its staff over the last 3 years. The company's payroll counts almost 100,000, 97,000 employees across all of their divisions. Kevin, do you think that this is an inevitable same-day delivery? Is that what this is going on here? I know the Next Web says, hey, President Obama is supposed to visit one of Amazon's fulfillment centers in Chattanooga, Tennessee, but they're not just going to hire a bunch of staff members to make the president think that Amazon's doing well. What do you think this is all about?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, just in general, even if Amazon isn't going with a same-day service, it certainly is has a need to grow its staff for this type of job, because I mean, you look at the numbers that Amazon sells, how many things it actually sells in a given day. I mean, just for me alone, I know the UPS truck shows up 3 times a week here where I live, and it's all from Amazon. More people are getting comfortable with buying things online, so it could just be general growth. But same day service, I mean, yeah, I could see it happening. I don't think 5,000 additional, I mean, it is 25% more. I don't think there's any guarantee there. It depends on where those 5,000 are going to be. My guess is it's going to have to be metro areas for same-day service, and we don't know where the staff is, so it's hard to say.
There's a lot of controversy over Amazon and its employment, how much it pays people, the hours it makes people work. It's not necessarily similar to what we were talking about Pegatron in the news fuse, but there's some criticism of that, and there's always been the fights with Amazon over taxation. They seem to have settled that. I'm not trying to put forth a conspiracy theory, but certainly won't hurt them in the minds of the government officials they need to persuade that they're providing jobs in lots of areas of the country here. And I think it's very telling that the president is scheduled to visit a fulfillment center. Of course, everybody's trying to show that they are providing jobs to America right now. So that I think that's mostly what Amazon's up to here.
Well, then Amazon, not only are they providing goods from other services and other vendors, they have their growing line of Kindle devices. I'd imagine that they probably part of this is to fulfill all the Kindle sales that will happen. There's rumors of the set-top boxes, whatever revisions are happening to the next Kindle Fire HDs, all those things. They're probably going to need a lot more hands, especially near the holiday season, because if they line up their tablets and set-top boxes around the same time, and we're expecting Apple to do the same, obviously they're going to be doing the same fulfillment, they're going to need a lot of people to get those orders out.
Yeah, maybe that's just, it's a little bit of a, we foresee a huge crush a few months from now, so we might as well hire everybody now, so the training is all out of the way, and we have a nice well-oiled machine by the time the Kindles are flying off the shelves again.
Yeah, that's a good point. And everybody's in a breakneck pace to figure out same day or super fast delivery. And you need bodies for that. There's no way around it.
Beating hearts. Pulses.
Yes.
Those not beating robots. Hearts.
So romantic. But you could put the beating heart in a robot to power it, potentially. But that's for another time. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle. Do you want the new Samsung Galaxy S4 or maybe the Moto X that's going to be announced on Thursday, or an HTC One, iPhone 5? Well, before you upgrade, make sure you sell your used phone or gadget to Gazelle for cash. Ayaz, you just did this, right? You just sold your old Nexus 7 and so you can get the new Nexus 7.
That's right. I use the Amazon code so I can get extra 5% so I can ladder my devices a little bit better.
That's the trend. Gazelle is buying back a larger selection of tablets. In addition to the iPad, you can sell select Samsung, Google Nexus, Kindle Fire, Microsoft Surface, and Asus tablets. You get a risk-free offer for your gadget. Lock it in for 30 days. That gives you time. It's not like Ayaz had to sell his Nexus 7 and send it away and have no tablet. He waits until the new one arrives. Then he ships the old one off to Gazelle. And as soon as they get it, they turn around and pay you by cash or PayPal, or like you said, with the Amazon bonus of 5%. Offers are good for 30 days, and you will get your money fast. Sometimes they'll even send you a box. What's your iPhone, Samsung, your other Android smartphone, your tablet worth Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com to find out. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy or iPhone today at gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right. Into Nokia. We heard this in the news, Fuse, I asked, talking not nicely about Microsoft.
It's not quite smack talk, but Nokia's VP of App Development, Brian Biniak, he talked to International Business Times, and he said of Microsoft, Nokia is trying to change the way Microsoft's thinking, saying time is of the essence. Biniak said of Microsoft, waiting until the end of your fiscal year when you need to close your targets doesn't do us any good when I have phones to sell today. On apps, he says that if there's an app someone cares about and it's not on a Nokia phone, that's a missed opportunity of a sale. You, quote, you can't sell a phone without the apps. You just can't, he says. And, quote, to give you a reason to switch, I need to make sure the apps that you care about on your device are not only on our phones, but are better. I also need to provide you unique experiences that you can't get on your other devices. Kevin, is this signaling a bigger, like, growing fight between Microsoft and Nokia right now?
Well, I don't know if it's exactly a growing fight, but I have to say that Biniak's comments sounded very much a frustration. And I know Nokia's been putting out some great hardware in the Lumia line, and they've even added some great software and other features. But it still all comes down to exactly what Biniak is saying. There really hasn't been a great reason for people to switch. iOS, Android, they pretty much own 90% of the market right now. They've got the consumer mind share, so they've got the apps that people want today. They've got the developer mind share, so they got the apps that people will want tomorrow. It sounds like a bit of frustration that Nokia is really trying to push things forward as fast as it can, but it sounds like it feels that Microsoft is just not moving as quickly. And I can't say I disagree with Biniak. It's unfortunate because it's a great platform, but if it doesn't have the apps that I want and need, I can't switch to it. And that's why I haven't.
That's the way I read this too, Kevin. It just seems like they're kind of frustrated that they've been pushing and pushing and not getting the things that they feel they need out of Microsoft. And this sort of thing is usually the tip of an iceberg. When you see a little bit of frustration in an interview, it may mean some raised voices in a conference room somewhere else previously. I don't think it's trouble in paradise. I don't see Nokia leaving Microsoft or even experimenting with other platforms anytime soon. But Microsoft's going to have to keep Nokia. Nokia is their greatest hope for getting the Windows Phone platform popular and continuing to increase its market share.
And Nokia's made some good applications for Windows Phone. I believe they were the ones trying to get Instagram on a Windows Phone. They had a bunch of campaigns. I think they successfully made a YouTube app for Windows Phone because Microsoft couldn't get the deal done with Google. They went back and forth. It seems like because this guy's the VP of app development, he's in charge of basically making the software for Nokia's phones. And the fact is they're not seeing a ton of support from third-party developers or even Microsoft. Like in the article, the Business Times article was mentioning, Windows Phone is, what, priority number 4, 5 for Microsoft? Because Windows Phone is just so low when it comes to what things are important to Microsoft between Windows 8, then there's Xbox and whatever else they're trying to get their hands in. If Windows Phone is all the way in the bottom here, and then their first best buddy, Nokia, here, they're expressing frustration. Just kind of curious how long that relationship can stay.
Well, and it's odd that someone from Nokia would be saying, listen, at Microsoft, time isn't of the essence. I mean, it's more or less what he's saying is that they can't get on board. Why isn't it of the essence at Microsoft? I mean, yeah, sure, Microsoft might have other priorities right now, but Windows Phone shouldn't be buried in there. Think about a year ago now. This whole thing, and it was going to catch on, and it was going to be the future of mobile for Microsoft. I mean, how did it get to a point where Nokia people are saying, why are you guys just going to deal with it at the end of your fiscal year so that your numbers look good? I mean, this should be priority that's as important for Microsoft as Nokia, if not more. This is their operating system.
It's interesting because I was at the Nokia Lumia 1020 launch about a week or two ago, and I had a chat with some of the folks at Nokia, and I asked them why in a 40-minute conversation to show off the new phone did it take until minute 28 to actually mention Windows Phone? And there's really nothing new for them to say there. I mean, this was all about the camera on that device, the hardware. Again, it's Nokia pushing forward. And what they told me that was, you know, at least with this sensational camera that we have, and I agree that it is fantastic, we can at least be part of the conversation when a consumer walks into a retail outlet and says, I want a new phone. Because right now, it almost seems like they're not part of the conversation. And again, I sense frustration on all their parts right now.
And maybe Microsoft is, devoting attention to their own device. There's been rumors that they're going to make a phone the way they've made a tablet, in which case they might not be giving Nokia all the attention that they had been previously getting. And that
Son of Kin?
Cause frustration. What's that?
Son of Kin?
Yeah. Oh, Kin of Kin.
The Zune phone?
I can't wait for the Zune phone. I've been waiting for years. So is Alex Gumpel. All right. We've got competition in the wearable computer category of putting it on your face, apparently. Google Glass has a less creepy and much cheaper pair of specs, according to TechCrunch.
Yeah, so Google Glass has been accused by some of being cool technology but creepy. You know, you've got all these people now who might be adding unwanted surveillance to the world. Glass Up is a prototype pair of augmented reality sunglasses, but without the camera. So the whole idea is that you are getting information about the world. It's text messages and things like that. But you're not actually able to record the world around you. You would connect as a second screen via Bluetooth from something like a smartphone. So if you think, all right, well, if there's no camera, what would this be helpful for? Well, in the Indiegogo campaign that Glass App has currently running right now, they're about halfway away from their goal with about a week and a half left. And they say you could, not have to keep consulting the map on your phone if you're somewhere unfamiliar. Or if you are visiting an interesting city, you might get information about historical landmarks. That could be interesting. If you're a cook, maybe you'd be needing to consult a recipe or some sort of info while you work. So the whole idea is that you can have information coming in, but you're not really recording what you are seeing. What's a little bit unusual about this Indiegogo campaign is most of the time, if you don't meet your goal, then the campaign just goes away because the interest wasn't there. The company says they'll deliver products. The Glass Up will be made, even if they don't make their funding goal, because they have investor backers who are as yet unnamed, and that the actual models, once prototype is set, is due to go on sale starting in February next year. I guess my question is, okay, well, if you take the glasses out, then I guess people can't say, hey, you might be recording me in the locker room or something like that. You're going to be contributing to Prism. But is it really all that compelling if you don't have a camera? If you're going to go through the trouble of wearing the stuff on your face, Kevin, is a camera kind of the deal breaker here, or do you think Glass Up has something?
I think the camera is probably the killer feature on Google Glass right now. So whether we think it's creepy or not, it's still that type of feature that people are using, people that have glass anyway. I don't own a pair. I have used them. And it'd be great to have notifications and all kinds of information just pop up in my glasses and all. But then again, I have my phone for that. I have a smartwatch for that. I think that camera is probably that feature that people really want with Google Glass. Maybe the people around them don't want people to have that, but that's a whole different story entirely. So I really don't know if Glass Up is going to find a big following here. I just don't see it.
Yeah, it seems to me like an interim step. Like it's a product of not understanding what Google Glass is as a piece of technology and interpreting that, you know, in all of these different scary ways, when really, you know, our phones have cameras on them and we take pictures of things all the time. The only difference is it's now on my forehead. Having a pair of glass, I used it this weekend when I was camping. I mean, the camera, like you said, Kevin, absolutely. It's the killer feature. It's the reason that I put glass on. It does all these other really cool things, but the camera aspect of it is why I reach for it when I do. So it would be a big loss, I would think.
It seems like a tier. Right. Yeah. You know, we have mid-range phones, we have feature phones, and we have top level smartphones. This seems like a mid-range glass, right?
Right.
$299 gets you the Glass Up, $399 gets you the Glass Up with prescription on the Indiegogo campaign. So to me, it's like, hey, if you don't care about the camera, you just want something with some notifications, here's a way to do it. Maybe it's still a little expensive, but it's still early days for this as well. It seems to be less of a, like, we're going to bring Google Glass down, and more of like, hey, we've decided this market is potentially big enough that there's a niche to be filled for somebody who either doesn't want the creepy camera or doesn't want to pay that much and can do without it.
And aside from that, like, okay, so the creep out factor comes from the people that encounter this technology, right? It's not necessarily the person that's wearing it, because the person that's wearing it has accepted that. It's the people that encounter them. 99% of the people that encounter somebody wearing this are still going to think it's got a camera on it and still be completely creeped out by it. So I don't know how that really solves the problem, the perceived problem. Anyways.
It seems more of like this is less of a Google Glass competitor and more of a, hey, you can wear something on your body that has a certain kind of style and look. Yeah. That will give you a little bit extra. You know, probably in another few years, we'll all laugh about how nobody's sunglasses used to be able to read their text messages.
You're wearing dumb glasses? Really?
Yeah. Why? Just why? You're so throwbacky.
And just a note, for those who don't know, Indiegogo allows you to keep your money even if you don't hit your goal. So that gives them a little bit of flexibility to do that thing where they can say, like, even if we don't hit our goal, we'll still make it, because then the venture capitalists only have to fill in the remaining amount. Let's finish up discussion by talking about an article by John at TrueVentures.com. True Ventures is a venture capitalist. They fund Fitbit. They funded MakerBot. They actually invest in GigaOm as well. And he was talking about how there's a revolution in hardware coming. Smartphones have caused cheaper processors, cheaper memory, cheaper sensors to be built. Things like Kickstarter and Quirky are allowing people to get together funding faster. There's ubiquitous wireless broadband. You may not love the wireless broadband, but it's there. It didn't used to be there. And there's things like 3D printing. He says building factories is no longer a prerequisite for building products. And everything you make is connected to data. He uses MakerBot as an example there. MakerBot to Thingiverse. Thingiverse is the place where you can find all the things you can print on MakerBot. So it does all come down to data in the end. But he says there's a hardware revolution about to happen. It's beginning to be a Cambrian explosion of hardware. Conventional wisdom from a lot of people has been that, well, hardware has matured, especially in the smartphone arena, and we're not going to see a lot of innovation there. But then you have wearable tech, you have 3D printing. Where do you fall on this? Kevin, let's start with you. Do you think there's a big explosion of hardware above and beyond just the things we've seen with watches and glasses?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, I know John. He's a bright guy, not just because he invested in GigaOm, but because he knows the market, he knows the trends and what's coming up. And absolutely, I totally agree with him. I've been a tinkerer of all things, you know, technical for a long time, and now is a great time to be a geek. And it's also a great time for people who are mainstream people to start putting things together and making things talk. The new web technologies, 3D printing, all types of things that have been going on, the reduction in prices of chips, what those chips can do. I mean, think about what a smartphone today can do for how much money versus what it could do 5 years ago and how much smaller the components are. This is awesome. This is like, this is a dream come true for me. This is an exciting time to be watching all this happen. And I think John is spot on that people are going to start putting their own bits together to do what it is they want those bits to do. I think it's great.
And smartphones and apps basically made a lot more people into geeks than it used to be. You have this really cool device, and then you find out you can do more. It can connect to other pieces of hardware like a Fitbit or a Nike Fuel Band, all these ideas that you start realizing that you have this device that can talk to another device. I know years ago, like when I first got into computers, the idea of having a home network was kind of alien. You wouldn't really have that unless you're like on the engineering floor at my college. They had a network on their own floor. But this idea that pretty much every household that has internet access will have Wi-Fi, they have a home network, and they realize that these devices can do way more than they thought. They can talk to each other. And we always laughed about the idea of a smart refrigerator. Why would you, like, who's ever going to need an internet-connected refrigerator, a toaster, a coffee maker? And it seems less crazy as the time goes on, because now there's a device that you can interface with, either it's your smartphone or your laptop or a website that says, oh, your coffee's ready or something like that. It seems like these phones and apps really made it possible for people to believe this could happen.
Well, and it made it possible to get beyond the whole, like, ooh, you could have a computer screen in your fridge, because we all went like, that seems cool, but nobody can really think of a use case where it's necessary. It's like the technology, we wanted it to exist, and now it doesn't really need to be in every device. You can have more of a central place that is, for the most part, one of the cheapest pieces of technology you might have in your entire home that can control everything.
Yeah, it's not in your fridge. It's in your thermostat. It might even be in the things you put in your fridge.
Right.
It's in your home automation system. And don't forget things like Arduino, Raspberry Pi are good examples of this as well. I can't wait to see what comes out of this. And I think this is the answer to app lock-in. People are like, oh, they're worried about ecosystems. And if Android or Apple gets too powerful, will that be a break on innovation because it's not as open and you have to live in the ecosystem to get it to work? And I think this kind of hardware innovation is the kind of thing that breaks you out of that, because suddenly you have somebody who's made something independently that's compelling, and you want to be able to work with that too, and that drives the openness of the internet forward. So I'm a big fan of this article as well. I think you're spot on. Let's move on to the randomizer. We've been doing straw polls most days for randomizer. Today we had four articles up there. The first open source airplane could cost $15,000. XKCD's Time comic came to an end after 3,000 panels. A robot showing off parkour moves and a speed limit set for ultra-fast electrical switch. We'll include links to all of those in our show notes at twit.tv/TNT. But it looks like the winner is XKCD's Time comic. This has been going on for 3,099 panels. I can't remember when he actually began this particular comic, but it's been slowly rolling out. A new frame in the series, one at a time. It started with sandcastles. It turned into exploration of a world and then meeting new people who you didn't speak the language. And they finally got to the end. Did any of you guys take a look at this? There's a great animation of it at Geek Wagon.
I did not see it.
No, you guys got to watch this.
I was waiting for the animation.
Yeah, so am I, Sarah.
Everybody is going to see it right now.
It's buffering for me. It's my ISP.
Yeah.
Do you guys like Randall Monroe and XKCD?
Yeah, you read absolutely.
It's a very classic him. Got his sensibility. It's really fun. It'll take about 15 minutes to run through all 3,099 panels as well. GeekWagon did a really interesting thing as well, where they allowed people to rate the significance of particular panels, so it'll slow down on those panels so you can take a look at them, because maybe they have dialogue on them or they're particularly interesting part of the storyline.
I'm guessing they're getting hit right now because I'm getting absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's the first 200 panels. I don't know.
It's been up or down for me, and I can swear the first 200 panels are not blank, so do go back and try to get back at it. I couldn't see it last night, but I was able to get in this morning. I think it goes in waves.
Should have gone with a parkour robot.
I should have. Well, the other thing is you don't want people spying on you while you do this stuff. It's nobody's business whether you're watching the XKCD comic or not. That's why you use VPN. ProXPN is a great option. I use it. More and more you hear about stories about governments, ISPs, everybody wanting to see what you're doing on the internet. Keep them out, especially if you're using free Wi-Fi, whether it's at a coffee shop or a hotel or an airport or anywhere. That data, there's lots of ways people can sniff out your packets, but it's really hard for them to do if you're using VPN. ProXPN is a global VPN solution. It works almost any internet connection, allows you to use your web browser, your email, your file sharing, your instant messaging, all the things that you normally use, but it keeps everything you do hidden from prying eyes, even disguises your physical location and gives you unfettered access to any website or online service, no matter where you live or travel to. A 512-bit encryption tunnel protects your traffic, and it works via OpenVPN or PPTP. I actually use it on my phone. Protect yourself against six strikes rules or internet filtering or spies in the coffee shop. Works on Windows and Mac. And Steve Gibson of Security Now gave it a great review as well. World-class customer support as well. Go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year. But we've got a special offer. Use the code TNT to receive 20% off for the lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. And if you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. So go to proxpn.com/twit and sign up with the code TNT. We thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. You should thank them too. Let's see what's on the calendar.
Tomorrow, the 30th, Xiaomi is holding a press conference to announce a product-related partnership with Tencent's messaging service, QQ. What could it be? We'll find out soon.
That would, for those who don't know, that'd be kind of like Apple announcing a partnership with Facebook in the United States.
Right.
Kind of that level. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
It's a message from Amy from Maryland. She says, hey guys, on Friday you were trying to figure out if there's a similarity between what is happening to Apple to what happened to BlackBerry and Nokia. I think a better parallel would be what happened between Apple and Microsoft many years ago. Apple was way ahead with a great WYSIWYG computer. Microsoft was years behind Apple. Apple's OS stagnated at the level where they were as Microsoft improved year after year. Eventually, Microsoft improved over the old Apple operating system and had almost all the market share. Also, Apple's computers were very closed and controlled systems, while PCs were much more open and allowed clones to be made by other companies. I think this comparison is very close to the Apple Android of today. Hope you had a good weekend.
All right. Thanks for the email, Amy. And that brings us to the end of the show. And thank you, Kevin Toefel. You rock. Great having you on the show. Hope you'll
appreciate
come back.
It. Will do. Thanks.
Let folks know where they can find your work, what you've been working on, anything else you want to talk about that's going on over there at GigaOM.
Sure. I'm over at GigaOM.com, where I pretty much cover all the mobile bits going on. I do a Chrome podcast over there as well. And you can catch me on Twitter. I'm at Kevin C. Toefel or Google+. I'm pretty much all over the place, and I hide behind my real name. So ping me anytime.
No one would ever think to look for you there. So Kevin C. Toefel. Got it. Will do. Thank you, man. Great to have you on the show. And thanks you folks for submitting stories in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. That is the place where you can make your voice heard about the stories we talk about each and every day. You can even comment on them, have a little conversation Reddit style with other people who watch or listen to Tech News Today. Go to technewstoday.reddit.com to do that. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Danny Sullivan from Search Engine Land joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.